Hello, thanks a lot for giving me the opportunity of presenting this work here. So this talk is a little bit different to the talks that we've heard so far. And in particular, it's about the possibility of coupling classical gravity and quantum matter, and about an Ogo theorem that tells us the conditions under which this is actually possible. So first of all, let me just give you a disclaimer that I'm going to talk about gravity, but the theorem is not actually about gravity. So it is not necessary that we are talking about gravity. It's just about coupling two different physical systems. And also, I'm basically contrasting quantum and classical, but more precisely, what I'm going to talk about is about contrasting classical and not classical. And hopefully this will become clear in the following. So to start, let me just give you a very simple motivation why we think that coupling classical and quantum theory is often problematic. And to do that, I will use this paper, an example from this paper from 2000. That is a very simple system. So basically, we have a classical harmonic oscillator and a quantum spin. And the Hamiltonian is the Hamiltonian of the harmonic oscillator and an interaction Hamiltonian that is, as you can see, couples the momentum of the harmonic oscillator with the Pauli, the Z Pauli operator of the quantum spin. So that's an example of quantum classical coupling. And what they, then what you can do, you can calculate the equations of motion. And in particular, you find that the x of the harmonic oscillator evolves as p plus a quantum operator of the spin. So already at this level, this doesn't make sense because we have a classical variable that is equated to a quantum operator. So then what can you do? Well, a simple thing you can do is just to replace the operator with its expectation value. But then the authors argue, and this is a quote from the paper, that this implies that quantum expectations can be deduced with arbitrary precision from the measurement of the classical variables x and p. So we have an inconsistency. And then basically the solution that we have if we want to overcome this problem is that either the classical system inherits some quantum features or the quantum system inherits some classical features. And then what we are going to look for that next is to have a genuine quantum and classical coupling. And we want to know whether this is possible or not. And in particular, we want to ask the following question. What is the most general consistent quantum classical coupling? Where by consistent, what I mean is that under time evolution, the classical system stays classical and the quantum system stays quantum. And I will give you a definition of classical and quantum. So now, let me come to gravity. What does this have to do with gravity? So let's start very basic. Let's take the Einstein's equations. And let's notice that on the right-hand side, we have a classical variable, classical gravitational field, and Einstein's equations are defined when the source of the gravitational field is classical. But from quantum theory, we also know that matter is fundamentally quantum. So basically, we have exactly the same problem that we had in the previous slide, that we would like to plug a quantum operator here on the right-hand side of Einstein's equations. So it's the same problem, just more complicated because this is gravity. So what are the possibilities? So again, like previously, either we want to make gravity quantum, or we can make matter classical, but that's not really an option, or we want to find a genuine quantum classical coupling. So from the quantum perspective, there is a field now that is pretty active that is about finding an experimental evidence of some quantum features of gravity. And this is not a new question. This is actually pretty old. It's from Richard Feynman at the Chapel Hill Conference in 1957. And what the situation that he imagined was to prepare a quantum system in a quantum superposition of two different positions, and then ask what happens if this quantum system is the source of a gravitational field. And then he concluded that if you believe in quantum mechanics up to any level, then you have to believe in gravitational quantization in order to describe this experiment. Now, recently, there was a variation of Feynman's initial thought experiment that I represent here that involves two masses in a quantum superposition of different positions that source a gravitational field. And they initially are in a product state. Now, if they interact via the Newtonian interaction, after some time, we find an entangled state. And then if we believe that gravity is the mediator of the interaction via the LOCC theorem that states that local operations and classical communication cannot generate entanglement, then we deduce that the gravitational field is not classical. Now, the interesting thing about this setup is that experiments are trying to do it in the lab. So, there is a roadmap that experimentalists are following. This will not be done tomorrow, but just to give you a few numbers, we get an entanglement rate, and if we plug in a mass that is like a Planck mass, a separation between these two masses that is 100 micrometers, and the delocalization of the wave packet of the single mass that is 1 nanometer, the entanglement time is 0.1 seconds. So these are all ambitious numbers, but they're not totally unrealistic. And the time scales is, can be like 10, 20 years for this experiment. So now it is interesting to understand what we can find if we do, what we can conclude on, about the nature of gravity if we actually perform these experiments. So why should we care? We still have many theoretical questions in this regime, and we, in particular, we do not know, just varying, like being more creative about the type of experiment that we can make, which quantum features of gravity we will be able to test. Secondly, we might think, okay, but this is just Newton interaction. What are we going to find if we, this is just Newton? But things actually are not so simple. So in particular, there is a protocol that we have in this paper here, and you've heard about the follow-ups of this paper from Gotham on Monday, where if two particles interact via the Newton interaction, but in addition, we have also no faster than light signaling principle, then we have to introduce vacuum fluctuations of the gravitational field and gravitational radiation emitted in a quantum state not to incur into any faster than light signaling. So there are subtleties that we have to take into account. And in addition, and I'm going to explain that in a few slides, if the alternative that we have is that instead of taking a quantum description of gravity, we modify the theory. But we have to be careful when we do that because it can lead to non-trivial effects. Finally, you can also see this approach as a first principle approach. Basically, taking elements from GR, taking elements from quantum theory, put them together and test the consistency of a physical theory with thought experiments. And since we're using quantum information tools, then we have the option, the hope, to discover something new. Because quantum information, by its own very definition, is not tied to a specific regime, but only on general principles and probabilities that we can measure in the lab. So we can find some results in a specific setup and then see which one of the conditions we have to give up if we want to go to a more complicated situation. So that's my personal view of, about this. And then another thing that we are missing now is, okay, but imagine we're going to do this experiment in the lab. Then, if we want to prove something about the nature of gravity, we cannot start by assuming a specific theory for the gravitational field. But we want to prove that gravity is one theory or another, just relying on our experimental apparatus and on probabilities, and maybe on some general principles that we want to assume. So what I'm saying is that we can take a theory-independent approach that is basically the same approach as Bell's theorem, but leveraged to the level of theories. And the tool that I'm going to use now is generalized probabilistic theories. The idea is that we don't take any ontological statement about my physical theory, but we only take the fact that a theory is characterized by its probabilities. And then we can define a physical system via three procedures: preparation, transformation, and measurement. Preparation is basically which knob I'm going to press in my experimental setup to prepare a quantum state. The transformation is the basically all how the device that I have in my lab act on this physical system. And the measurement is the procedure through which I obtain a classical outcome. More technically, we can think about the preparation as a convex state space, so it's a vector space, and where the pure states are the extremal states of the set, and the mixed states are convex combinations of pure states, so they're inside. The transformations is the set of linear operations that maps the set of states into itself. And finally, the measurements is the dual set to the state space, such that we get correct probabilities, basically. So if I apply a measurement to any state of this of the state space, I have to get a number between 0 and 1. And when I sum over all possible outcomes, I have to get 1. So now I can finally define what a classical and quantum system is. Classical systems for an n-dimensional system is basically, we can represent it as a vector where the entries of these vectors are numbers between 0 and 1, and they're positive and they sum up to 1. And then the set of measurements is the set of all possible functionals that, when applied to this state, return a number between 0 and 1. So what I would like to emphasize is that this definition is done without assuming the theory first. It's just a very abstract definition that we are going to match with some physical system that we find. And the simplest example is a bit where we have here the two extremal states that are the pure states. So it's like a coin, and these two states are the two faces of the coin, and the measurement is like throwing the coin and asking which face of the coin. And then in between these two are all the classical probabilities of getting head or tail. Well, for quantum systems, the set of states is defined as the set of n by n density matrices, Hermitian density matrices on complex numbers, which are positive operators and whose trace is 1. And the set of measurements is also the most classical, the most general functional that gives me a correct probability, so a number between 0 and 1. And that sums up to 1. And the most famous example of this is a qubit. And well, I think this picture needs no introduction in this community. So that's the Bloch sphere. And we have all the pure states are the extremal states of the set. And states that are on opposite poles are perfectly distinguishable one from the other. So now, this classical and quantum theory are two instances of physical theory, and we want to see how, if they can interact consistently. So why did I say that we have to be careful if we want to modify the theory? And why is this not trivial in general? So let us consider some modification to the dynamics of the type of the Schrödinger-Newton equation. So a non-linear dynamical equation of this type, where you see the linearity is encoded in this F here. Now, in 1980, Bogdan Milnik basically found, using a method that is similar to generalized probabilistic theories, that if you have two arbitrary pure states, and you evolve them using this time evolution, then basically you can map them to any other state on the Bloch sphere. So basically, you can also take them to two opposite poles of the Bloch sphere. And so any arbitrary pair of pure states is perfectly distinguishable. And this means that the theory is effectively classical. So it acquires classical features. Modifying the dynamics also changes the kinematic structure of the theory. So we have to be careful, and what I mean is that we have to be careful and we have to take a more complete view of the physical theory if we want to make statements and make sure that something is quantum or classical. So this brings me to the main result, to the no-go theorem, that I will read, and it's like, if we take two GPT systems, S and G, which interact via some interaction I, then at least one of the following conditions must be violated. And these conditions are the system S is fully non-classical, the interaction I is reversible, there is information flow from system S to system G, and G is classical. So now I will define all these things. Fully non-classical for us means a non-classical system which is not superselected. In quantum theory, basically superselected systems are block diagonal, and they, for instance, you can imagine that there is a conservation rule, and there is a superselection rule, which means that I cannot prepare a quantum superposition of states with different charges. Reversible interaction for us means that if we start from two systems S and G and we couple them via some interaction, after the interaction we will get something else, and the interaction is reversible if for any arbitrary initial state we can find another allowed interaction in the set of allowed transformations such that the state is mapped to the initial state. So, to give you an example, a unitary interaction is very simply reversible, because given any psi, I can find a U dagger that is still an allowed transformation such that psi is mapped back to psi. But something that maps a density matrix psi psi to this mixed state is not reversible, because basically every state is mapped to this mixed state, and then I do not know how to go back with another interaction. Finally, information flow is, again, we take two systems and we let them interact with I, and there is information flow from one to two if the state of two after the interaction does not only depend on the state of two before the interaction and possibly on the interaction, but also non-trivially on the state of one. More generally, we can phrase them in terms of probabilities as the probability of measuring outcome E2 in two depends non-trivially not only on S2 and I, so the preparation of two, the input data that I give to system two, but also on S1. So basically, it's a definition of signaling from one to two. And in particular, if you want to specify this to gravity, and we take one as the source, two as the gravitational field, this means that the state of the source influences the state of the gravitational field. So this notion encodes back reaction. And this is a property that we would like to keep, because it's a basic definition of what a gravitational field does. So the intuition behind the proof is that assume that S is fully quantum. Now, let us prepare an initial state of S and G, and let's make it interact with some interaction I that is reversible. We will get something else. Now, assume that there is a back reaction from S to G, so there is signaling. So G encodes some information about S. So this means that if I make a measurement, I can extract some information about S from G. But G is classical, so it's not disturbed. So this state is nothing is going to happen to this state. Then I is reversible, so I can apply the inverse operation, and I get back the initial state. But now, what I constructed is a non-disturbing measurement with information gain, and this is impossible. And so basically, I have to give up one of these four conditions here. Now, what happens if I now want to consider this in a gravitational setting? So let's take the theorem, and let's take S as the position degree of freedom of a quantum system, and G as the gravitational field. Now, the position degree of freedom of a quantum system, as far as we know, is not superselected, so one is satisfied. In class, we want to keep the back reaction of a source on gravity, so this means that 3 is satisfied. So now we're only left with 2 and 4. And the theorem is not normative. We can give up one or the other. So basically, which one you give up depends on your preference. Imagine that we want to keep the reversibility of interactions. Then the only possibility that we are left with is to give up the classicality of G. But we have another option, that is, we actually do not care about interactions being reversible or not. We are fine with giving it up. So the only other possibility is to keep the classicality of G and give up reversibility. So if we go for this and we want to keep gravity as classical, then we see that giving up condition one would mean rejecting quantum theory, basically, because we would have to have a superselection rule on preparing a quantum system in a quantum superposition of positions. Then, rejecting condition two is rejecting reversibility. Rejecting condition three would mean that, according to the state of the source of gravity, the gravitational field cannot change. So it would be rejecting one of the basic principles of general relativity. So to give you an example of a model that is consistent with this no-go theorem, it's a post-quantum theory of semi-classical gravity by Jonathan that is a consistent classical and quantum coupling that has back reaction and is not reversible. And so in this case, the irreversibility of the model should not be seen as a flaw, but it's really just the most general thing you can get. So this is basically everything I wanted to tell you. And I just want to stress once more that generalized probabilistic theories offer us a tool to test the consistency of a theory from a bird's eye view of the two theories and how they fit together. And the example is, for instance, the nonlinear Schrödinger equation that, even though it was introduced to make a classical quantum coupling, then we see that this changes the structure of the part that we wanted to keep as quantum. It allows us to characterize the most general description from first principles. And it also allows us to rule out alternative descriptions based on solely laboratory operations. And I'm saying this not because I think that it's likely that we will find some strange theory of gravity, but it's just because from a logical perspective, and a consistency point of view, this is an interesting avenue to have. And then I want to leave you with a provocative quote by Milnick, that though it may be very difficult to quantize gravitation, it is even more difficult not to do it if you want to keep the reversibility of interactions. And and then let me just do some advertising to end. So there is this community, the Quantum Information Structure of Space-Time, that is a community that involves people in quantum information and people in quantum gravity, and also theory and experiments, and also some philosophers. And it's addressing that questions that are, there are many points of contact with this community here. And there are many participating institutes in the world. And so the methods maybe are a bit different and the questions are also different, but not so much. So maybe just take this as an invitation to talk more. And we have also many events. And if you want to know more, please get in touch. I'm very happy to give you more details. And with this, I would like to thank you. Thank you.
this work? Okay, thanks, Flaminia. Let's take some questions. Okay, back there. I'm going to try to toss this to you. It might land a little soon.
Great. One question. Should I think of non-reversible as non-unitary, or are these two different things? I'm sorry if my question is very simple.
No, it's fine. So it could be non-unitary, but it also could be something else. So yeah, non-unitary is for sure an example of not reversible.
But when you say non-reversible, I can find something non-reversible but unitary?
No, if it's unitary, it would be reversible, yeah. Non-unitary, it might be not reversible, yeah.
Okay,
great. Let's take a question from Zoom, Jonathan.
Yeah, so we have a question from Alexei Milikin. Could you unmic yourself and ask the question?
Thank you. So the original motivation of Max Planck of quantizing things is the ultraviolet catastrophe. If you assume that things are classical, then the black body radiation diverges. So does the same problem happen to gravity? And how can it be avoided if you assume that the gravity is classical? Sorry, maybe this question is not directly related to what you said.
So I didn't really understand the ultraviolet catastrophe, and I just didn't get the question.
Like the ultraviolet catastrophe for gravitons instead of photons. If you do thermal physics of gravitational waves and you assume that to arbitrarily high frequency they're classical, then you have arbitrarily large energy density, and that contradicts observation.
Okay, so maybe, one thing I should say is that these theorems are currently thought not to address really the ultraviolet regime, but they're thought to address a weak field regime of the experiments that people will do in the lab. So if you want to extrapolate these conclusions to the ultraviolet regime, then you have to assess very, very carefully all your assumptions and see if they hold or if they do not hold. So I wouldn't dare making a statement on the ultraviolet regime at this stage here.
Other questions from the in-person audience? Let's have Patrick.
I was wondering about this assumption of being fully non-classical, that you could imagine an interaction, for example, that would preserve the parity of the number operator in the harmonic oscillator. So that there would be, I think if I've understood properly, a superselection sector.
Yeah.
So can you say anything about that? Is it possible to weaken that assumption?
Yeah, so basically what happens if you, instead of a non-superselected system, you have a superselected system, is that you can preserve all the conditions of the Nogo theorem, but the only type of information that you can transmit is the Wich sector information. So that's, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
That is what happens.
We'll take another question from Zoom.
Oh, it's not, it's for, it's
from you.
Yeah.
Okay, then you can.
So it's a question, also maybe a partial answer, which is to the question of the ultraviolet catastrophe for gravity.
It's Alexei's question,
Oh, that's right, sorry. There's a paper by Achim Kempf and people where there's a claim that there's no, because we're not in equilibrium and the CMB just doesn't emit, it's happening so slowly that you actually wouldn't notice. So it might be there, but you wouldn't notice. My question, though, was, maybe it's similar to Patrick's in the sense of, can you make a statement, do you think, using these techniques about how much irreversibility you have to have? Is there a way to kind of say more about that at all, or is it more kind of a yes, no thing?
Yeah, no, so that's an interesting point. So in this paper, no, we cannot make any more precise statement, but that's for sure one aspect that would be worth investigating. Yeah.
Okay, let's have Ludovico come down and set up slides, and we can have the last question to Matt. Alex, could you hand Matt the...
Yeah, this is more about the motivation for your talk. I'm just curious about the status of the experiments mm-hmm. that are going to test whether gravity is quantum by trying to create I guess, entangled states via gravitational interaction. What is the plan for detecting the entanglement or witnessing it?
You mean the time scale?
Yeah, but how are they going to detect the entanglement?
Yeah, so, that's a good point. And so basically, at the moment, they have the... So I'm mostly in touch with Markus Aspelmeier, who is trying to do this experiment in Vienna. And he has two different lines of research. One is to take golden sphere, basically, and measure the gravitational field source by the sphere, and uses a Cavendish experiment to do that. And so now, currently, the record is 90 milligrams. So we know that a mass that is that weighs 90 milligrams can source a gravitational field, but is currently improving this by a factor of 4,000. So he's doing the Planck mass, basically, now in the lab. And now, and then the other direction is to basically trap these nanospheres, in a cavity, cool them to the ground state, then create a superposition and increase the coherence time, and keep the superposition there as long as possible and increase the mass. There is still a gap between these two, and also the problem is that these are two very different experimental techniques. So they have a plan on how to combine these two, but it will still take time.
Okay, we're over time. So let's thank Flaminia again.